This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Derek Nyberg is the president of the Forest Products Association of Canada. And as with everything in the economy, we're sort of doing a huge navel gaze and taking a look at the business of managing the bush, the forest products, what goes on in our timber. How are we cutting it? How are we selling it? Canada's working forest built on a couple of key rules, including protecting the ecosystem, ecosystem-based management and conservation, local input, collaboration, all the rest of it. Derek Nyberg joins us for a couple of moments. Sir, good morning to you.
Hey, Phil.
I guess I find that that we've never been more aware of what is going on in our forests. Just the other day, doing stories about huge quantities of BC bush being mowed, harvested, whatever you want to call it, to produce pellets to ship to Britain to run power stations and that sort of thing. It just seems to me that sometimes, you know, we have the conversations about shipping raw logs and so on. So many elements that are at play concerning something that we take so for granted.
Yeah, we have 10% of the world's forests here in Canada, and I would put Canada, Sweden, Finland at the top tier of robust regulation and measures in place to ensure for sustainability. I think the other thing, Phil, about forestry in Canada that's pretty unique, it's that level of consultation and engagement at the local level. Our forests in Canada primarily are on public land, so it's a shared resource, and the input of local municipalities and labor groups and Indigenous communities is really, really important in terms of determining what we do with the land base and how we do it.
The other side of that, though, is that there's, you know, at one time, what is that phrase, hewers of wood and drawers of water, and Canada was so built upon some very basic resource industries, and certainly forestry, timber, the bush, if you will, was at the very top of that pyramid. And I think we all, as British Columbians, had an understanding and an attitude of how important that was. But as forestry towns have disappeared, as processing plants have disappeared, as logs are moved by truck as opposed to happening in somebody's backyard, forestry doesn't seem to be that visible or that prominent, or we don't seem to be, as an urban environment, as aware.
Yeah, I think it's changed for sure over time. It's still a key driver for us. I think we've been one of the few bright spots during the pandemic in terms of economic output. We're about $80 billion a year in terms of economic output generated. And I know our partners at the BC Council of Forest Industries released the other day an economic report in terms of contributions. And just in the Thompson, Okanagan, there's about 20% of BC's mills are in the region. That's 14,000 jobs. And I think the other thing that struck me about that recent COFI report is just how much money our sector is still contributing to governments. And, I thought Tracy Gray was bang on earlier talking a bit about the financial problem that we have in terms of, coming out of this pandemic. And in BC alone, we've got about $4 billion a year that's going into federal and provincial and local governments. So those tax contributions by the sector are not only, they're important to our workers and communities, but governments are going to increasingly need us more than ever as we climb out of this fiscal mess.
Okay. So, and again, just to sort of bring that circle back by just a little bit, does the average urbanite, the person who maybe is driving in their car this morning or is sitting in this huge traffic jam waiting to come across the bridge, or maybe just sitting at the kitchen table and listening, are we aware? Do we care? Have you been able to convey the message to me and the people who listen to this radio station how important this industry is, its value to the economy of British Columbia, and more to the point, I believe, where wood is going to take us? I keep seeing these stories about the potential and the possibility of a 17-story, 35-story building totally being made out of engineered wood. To me, that's some of the most exciting subjects and some of the most exciting stories that are out there are the use of wood and where wood will be in our world by tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. I think over time, opinions of people in BC and across the country towards forestry have been very positive. I think where we've seen, with increased urbanization, increased immigration, you know, we're moving, you know, that lack of a connection to my mom or my grandpa worked in forestry is definitely changing over time. So, you know, I think there's a lot of Canadians don't know enough about us. I think in this, you know, as we move to a lower carbon economy, the changing climate space and the solutions that building with wood and using wood waste to displace other more carbon intensive materials is going to be a real opportunity. The other piece, Phil, I'd say, you know, as we push through this pandemic, I think, you know, self-sufficiency is really a top of mind. I think we're seeing it on vaccines in terms of the inability to produce here in Canada vaccines to provide for our people. When it comes to forestry and pulp for tissue or toilet paper or lumber to build homes, we've got the resource here. And it's incumbent on us to continue to manage it sustainably and continue to make the case so that we can provide products for Canadians right here at home and also good-paying jobs for forestry families.
More to the point, it strikes me that that the industry also is probably one of the most active when it comes to planning for and anticipating where markets are going to be and being prepared. I mean, let's face it, how many other industries have to send people out with a burlap bag over their shoulder, digging holes in the ground, you know, putting seedlings into the ground with the idea that 50 years from now or 20 years from now, we're going to be harvesting that timber. Your planning process is extends out a whole lot further than most industries that operate within our world.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're looking at models, you know, across Canada's forests in 100 to 200 year time frames, and across the boreal forest, which I think is really interesting to most people, is trees across the boreal live 80 to 100 years, then they die, which either pest attacks them, they burn, and then turn into carbon and methane emitters. You know, if we can continue to, you know, harvest those trees before they die, lock that carbon into a long-lived wood product and into a tall wood building, and then we replace what we take, and we more than replace what we take. So to restart that carbon cycle, I think, is why a lot of people are turning to forestry and forestry products to help us in this move to a lower carbon economy.
Conversation with Derek Nyberg. He's the president of the Forest Products Association of Canada, and I appreciate your time here this morning, sir. I'm going to ask you to. I'm going to ask you, and I want to come back to you on another day because there. I have some hot buttons. I have known an architect named Michael Green for a very long time, proponent of the very tall all wood building, engineer wood structures. And he talks in terms of that 35-story all-wood building. Am I going to see that building within the next 10 years?
Well, I think that depends on government's ability to modernize building codes, but we're definitely getting there. Canada's a leader, and I think the opportunity we're seeing, I mentioned that ability, that unique ability to lock carbon into a long-lived wood product. But the ability, and we've got some great companies like Structurlam in BC who are doing this cross-laminated timber, this mass timber design, you know, the ability to displace other materials where you can, like cement and steel that are more carbon intensive, the ability to almost build these buildings now like Legos almost, you know, so you have fewer trucks going in and out of communities to do these buildings. There's a ton of benefit, and Michael's clearly been a leader in terms of advancing that thinking in the architectural community.
Well, I knew he was in a different world when he was invited by Paris. They had a building site that was just adjacent to the Eiffel Tower. And I can still remember Michael Green proposing a building that would be a totally a wood construction project within sight of the Eiffel Tower. And I thought, Michael, I hope you get this job.
Michael's turned to the, you know, he's revered here in Canada, but also around the world, a true leading thinker in this space.
Yeah, absolutely. And he didn't get the job, didn't get the commission, but just the fact that wood had been invited to the table. And I think that was how I viewed it, is that it recognized the power of wood, the future of wood, the beauty of wood, because wood was there at the table. And I think increasingly that's where we're going to go societally, is it not?
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity. But there's, you know, listen, there's people that want to take us down. We're right now dealing with an environmental group out of the U.S. And I use that term carefully because, listen, we work with environmental groups on the ground that are interested in, multiple values management, and in that solution space, ask tough questions, make these decisions that are right for local communities. But you got some groups out there that have no interest in solutions. They're prepared to say anything, and they want to do to forestry what they've done to our oil and gas sector. And you know, it's those kind of attacks from south of the border and some of these special interest groups that we need to continue to speak out against and be vigilant on.
And it is your voice, sir, that we're going to invite to come back and do that again. So enjoyed this very brief and very short conversation. I wish it was bigger with more time because I happen to be a believer in wood and wood products in the future.
This has been the Early Edition Podcast. Catch the Early Edition from 6 to 9 a.m. on AM 1150 and online at am1150.ca.